Hello, I'm Anne Green and I'm a professorial fellow here at the Institute for Employment Research at the University of Warwick. My background's in geography and I undertake research on a variety of themes encompassing spatial variations in employment and non-employment, on local and regional labour markets, on migration and commuting, on welfare to work and area regeneration policy. A key theme of my work recently has been spatial inequalities in the UK and the importance of subnational perspectives on employment and skills. Key points from this research include, first, that there are subnational variations in employment structures and skills profiles. Secondly, that recession has tended to exacerbate these differences and inequalities. Thirdly, the economic opportunities and life chances vary across space, and they vary in a way that matters more for some people than for others. Fourthly, that there are opportunities for and limits to spatial mobility to increase chances of employment. And a fifth point is that there is greater emphasis now than was formerly the case on shaping policy to local context. And I'm going to say a little bit more about each of these themes, particularly the first, second and third themes. So my first point and contention is that place matters. Now there's been a good deal of hype about things like the death of distance and the flat world in the face of globalisation, and this might suggest that geography and place don't matter. Yet the reality is, and the work of Richard Florida endorses this, is that place is more important than ever before, with the clustering of talent, innovation and creativity, and also that where a person lives is important to every facet of their lives. Now, from a theoretical perspective, the new economic geography literature suggests that spatial differentials in employment opportunities are likely to diverge over time through processes of clustering and accumulation. And it also suggests that spatial inequalities are inherent in economic growth, such that unbalanced growth is an inevitable consequence of successful economic development. Now, these issues and inequalities pose challenges for current policies of spatial rebalancing of the economy. Other theoretical perspectives also point to the importance of geography. Evolutionary economic geography suggests that regional and local economic trajectories are shaped by historical and current circumstances. Now, this means that places carry their history with them. So what happens in the past influences what happens in the future. And likewise, the regulation school suggests that labour markets are socially embedded and constituted institutional spaces in which formal and informal customs, in which norms and practices underpinning employment are played out. And the upshot of this is that place-specific developments matter in understanding how local labour markets evolve over time, and also how employers, agencies, intermediaries and individuals behave in the labour market. So the upshot is, therefore, that geography and place matter. Now, secondly, there are long-standing and important spatial variations in output and in employment across the UK. Now, simplistically, key geographical divisions of variation are on north, south and urban-rural lines, but this is a broad picture. And we can look at these quantitative variations in employment by looking at variations in employment rates, and we can look at unemployment by using unemployment and non-employment rates. Now, that's about the quantity of employment and unemployment. But what's also important are spatial variations in the quality of employment. And here, in the UK context at least, London and the Greater South East emerge as the most favoured. Now, obviously, there are also important intra-regional variations in experience and variations at the micro scale. And at the micro scale, the recession from 2008 to 2009 has tended to exacerbate these spatial inequalities in labour market experience. So, once again, geography matters. Now, thirdly, research on the geography of labour markets indicates that despite transnational linkages across the world between labour markets, and despite people's interest in hypermobilities, in teleworking and long-distance commuting, the majority of journeys to work remain short. So I contend here, then, that geography matters more for some people than it does for others, and it matters most for those with poor skills. So the quantity and quality of jobs available locally is of particular importance for them. So while people with high-level skills can fill jobs demanding those skills, they can also do what's known as bump down in the labour market to take jobs requiring lower-level skills. By contrast, people with poor skills can only fill jobs requiring lower-level skills, and so they have a smaller pool of jobs available to them. Moreover, people with poor skills are likely to attract lower wages than those with high-level skills, and this means it's not worthwhile for them to travel too far if they're only going to get low pay. So this means that the quantity and quality of jobs available locally is of particular importance for them, and we can see this being reflected in greater spatial variation in employment rates for people with poor skills than for people with high-level skills such as degrees. On a related theme, I've also undertaken research on people's subjective geographies, sometimes known as geographical imaginations or mental maps. This is based on the idea that people process information through a place-specific perceptual filter. Now, place and identity can be powerfully connected, and this may result in some people not considering opportunities, whether they be for education, training or employment, beyond their immediate locality, or opportunities which differ from those conventionally followed by local people. In general, the work on this theme shows that subjective geographies of opportunity may be very much more limited than the objective geographies of opportunities. And this suggests that bounded horizons and relative immobility tend to constrain job search. And I refer you to the IER website and my webpage for details of publications on this theme, containing some nice illustrations of mental maps. Now, fourthly, there's a good deal of current policy interest in the role of greater spatial mobility in increasing chances of employment. There has been a shift away from the idea of taking work to the workers in favour of taking workers to the work. So spatial mobility is increasingly seen as part of the employability mix of individuals. And yet, research suggests that some people are relatively immobile, despite the fact that by moving, either by commuting further or by migrating, by shifting where they live, they may enhance their prospects for employment. Now, there are important work and non-work reasons for this, and I'm interested in exploring further the rationale for such immobility. And finally, an important emphasis of current policy developments is on local solutions to improve economic regeneration and combat worklessness through employment and skills development, often by means of local partnership working. This has been a key theme of work undertaken on the National Evaluation of the City Strategy Initiative at IER, here at the University of Warwick. But that's too big a story to tell now. However, you can look on the IER website for further details.